what we should be qualifying against is our target client profile. Is there a fit? Too often salespeople waste way too much time pursuing deals that they are never going to win at the prices that they want because it doesn't align with that target client profile.
Hello, and welcome to the BrandTune podcast, hosted by me, Shireen Smith, IP lawyer, marketer, and author of BrandTuned. The podcast focuses on how to design brands, avoiding commoditization and intersecting them with intellectual property during the creation process. Before the episode begins, I just want to mention the BrandTuned accreditation course, which is all about how to create new brands. The brochure outlining the curriculum is downloadable on the BrandTuned.com website. My guest today is Lee Saltz, a sales management strategist and founder of The Sales Architect. He conducts customized workshops on sales performance topics like Salesforce development, hiring, onboarding, and compensation. He's written many best-selling books, his sixth one being Sell Different, which was published by HarperCollins in September 2021. It outlines new sales differentiation strategies to outsmart, outmaneuver, and outsell the competition, and was finalist for top sales book of 2021. Hello, Lee, and welcome to the BrandTune podcast.
Shireen, nice to meet you.
So I'd like to begin this by asking you how you would define differentiation.
That's one of my favorite topics. Thank you for asking. You know, most of the time when I talk with executives about the subject of differentiation, their minds go one place, marketing. And they're not wrong. They're just limited in their beliefs. I believe there's two types of differentiation. There's marketing differentiation and there's sales differentiation. And they're related, but they're also different. So marketing differentiation is one directional communication for the masses. It says, hey, look at me, we're here. Right? That's what a trade show booth does. All the collateral materials that are produced, the website lays out all the potential of what could be. Sales differentiation is two directional communication with an individual. Everyone buys for a different reason. Sales differentiation gives us the tools to take all the potential of what could be and narrow it down to what should be for this individual in this circumstance. So they're very, very different, but they're also related.
Right. So why is it important to differentiate?
There's an expression that I've trademarked here. It's win more deals at the prices you want. And that's the fundamental purpose. In the absence of differentiation, price is going to win the day. And unless you're the low price provider, and even that doesn't guarantee that you're going to win the deal, that's terrible news. So if you're not differentiating yourself in a meaningful way, and that word meaningful is so important, a lot of times we try to differentiate, but we don't ask ourselves the question, is this meaningful? So for example, if I came into our interview today wearing my wife's beach hat and a funny shirt, it would certainly be different. I'm sure you've never had a guest come on dressed that way. But would that be meaningful for our audience? And of course, the answer is no. And while that's a fun, silly example, a lot of times companies like to talk about certain awards they've won. And they just toss them out and they expect it to be meaningful. And the reality is it makes us feel good as the ones that won the awards, but it's not necessarily meaningful to the people that we're interacting with unless we position that. A lot of times what I see when it comes to sales differentiation strategy is that salespeople toss out differentiators and leave it for the other person to decide how to feel about that. So we're the biggest. Like to throw that one out. That's one salespeople like to talk about. We're the biggest. and they just leave it out there for someone to decide, okay, is that a good thing or a bad thing? And when they do that, one of two really bad things happens. Either the person on the other side of the desk never figures out why it matters, or they give it a meaning that's not going to help the sale. So if you just toss out there, and this happens all the time, we're the biggest in the space, and they leave it there. And here's what the other person on the other side of the desk could be thinking. Oh, they're the biggest? So that means I get to be a number. I'm not excited about that. I don't want to work with a company that doesn't make me feel special. Mm-hmm. And if we don't position why that matters, we're the biggest, which means we have the most buying power, which allows us to reduce costs for our clients. Now our buyer's happy, but they would never derive on their own why that'd be advantageous to them.
So do you need to be unique? What does a business need to do to differentiate itself? Can you give some examples of?
Absolutely. You will not find the word unique in any of my books. Mm-hmm. The word unique is one of the biggest causes of frustrations in sales, because salespeople look for this holy grail, this one little nugget that as soon as they say it, the checkbook's just going to pop open. Mm-hmm. And it's almost never something that a company possesses, that this one little thing that no one else in the industry has. And what I work with clients to do is to develop their aggregate differentiated story, where it's not one little thing, that they're able to tell a story in a way that no one else could tell or position in the exact same way. So it's not one little thing, it's the aggregate of all these different things that we provide that leads to the development of a solution that you won't experience anywhere else.
Do you have some examples of?
Absolutely. Every day I work with organizations in developing their sales differentiation strategy. And we go through a lot of introspective exercises. So for example, if you go through a competitor analysis and you take two sides of a ledger, why you win, why they win, and price can't be on either side of the ledger. Mm-hmm. Then you look at the individuals that you're selling to. I call those decision influencers. Again, two sides of a ledger. What's keeping them awake at night that you could address? And on the right side, how can you help them with each one of those? And if you take those two exercises, why you win and how you can help, you wind up with a laundry list of ways that you're able to differentiate yourself in a meaningful way. And you put that together in an aggregate that you then develop a communication strategy around to be able to position your story in a compelling fashion.
Okay, so say you've got a patented innovation.
Yes.
And you are offering, I don't know, it could be anyone who's had a patent, like Dyson, who had a patent for those bagless vacuum cleaners. Yes. So how does the sales differentiation tie into that?
Right. So a patent by definition means that you have something that's unique, mm-hmm. but patents expire.
Yeah.
Right. That's how we get generic drugs. And so when we look at a situation where something is unique and you have a patent, you may have a patent for something. It doesn't mean it's the only way that a solution can be crafted. And a patent doesn't necessarily mean it's the right thing or the best thing for me to have as the buyer. Mm-hmm. So if you have a patent, you still have to position why this is meaningful, why it's significant. And if you aren't the ones that have the patent, you have to develop your own solution and a strategy to explain why your solution is a superior alternative to what the buyer can get.
So doesn't this depend on the buyer in terms of having the right buyer for your yes. differentiation?
Absolutely. So there's a concept that I talk about in both of those books, which is a target client profile. Shireen, does your audience like free things? Does your audience, our listeners, do they enjoy free things?
Free things, I'm sure they do.
Yes. Well, I actually have developed a tool that they can download to create a target client profile. And I'll explain what that is in a moment. Mm-hmm. But that URL is going to be very difficult to remember. It's targetclientprofile.com.
Okay, we'll be sure to add that to the show notes.
Perfect. Now, mm-hmm. our listeners are probably accustomed to the expression ideal client profile. And I think an ideal client profile is such a mistake for salespeople to have. And here's why. An ideal client profile says, this is the type of business, if we could ever find it, we'd love to have. It's almost like a lottery ticket. It's a one in a million chance. Mm-hmm. A target client profile says, this is who will perceive meaningful value in what we're selling. And in that worksheet, there are 9 components that help you to gain clarity on who those right people are. And the better you have that clarity, you're able to wisely invest every sales minute in the pursuit of those. So for example, one of the challenges that I see so often in sales is the price issue, right? Price always becomes an issue. And the most common reason why salespeople say this issue comes up is that it's the buyer's fault. They don't perceive meaningful value. We place all the blame on them, but it's our responsibility. And what I find so often when I work with clients and look at their win-loss portfolio and the deals that they lost and the ones that they say were attributable to price, the first question that I ask them is, when you look at your target client profile, those who perceive meaningful value, does this organization or this individual, do they align with that profile? And Shireen, you'd be amazed with how many times they said, well, you know what? Now that I look at it, no, they don't. So you didn't lose that deal. You never should have been involved in it in the first place. Then we go to the next tier. If they say, yes, they absolutely fit our target client profile. When they push back on price, you've probably heard the expression objection. We like to call it an objection. Mm-hmm. It's not an objection. It's constructive criticism. If you think of two sides of a scale, you have meaningful value on one side and your price on the other. What they're saying to you is you have not demonstrated enough meaningful value to support the price that you put in front of them. It's as simple as that.
Right.
And when you break it down in those terms, it's very easy for salespeople to understand, when I have clarity on who those right people are, those right opportunities to pursue in that target client profile, and if the price issue is coming up, is this really in alignment with that profile? And if it is, and I'm hearing that enough, I need to retool my communication approach because I'm not demonstrating enough meaningful value to support the price that I'm putting in front of them.
Okay. Yeah, I'm actually developing an online program, which I spoke to a few people about, and I asked them how much they would pay for it. And interesting variation in prices. But I found that designers and marketers quoted lower prices that they would pay for this, whereas IP lawyers, who I am, maybe because they understand the value anyway of IP and branding, they were sort of offering to pay 3 times as much for the program. So I guess that tells you that some buyers don't see an objection to your prices and actually value it intrinsically.
So let's talk about that that opportunity that you're talking about. So you have one group that really today doesn't perceive meaningful value in what you're offering, and there's another group.
Well, not as high a value. So
right. And the other one saying we'll pay 3 times that number. So for the ones that are the lower number, when you think of the course and what they would learn from it, do you think that they're really the right people for it?
Well, they need it. Yes, they absolutely need it. But I'm not sure if it's because they can only afford less, or whether because there's some education involved to understanding why it's so important.
Well, it could certainly be a financial piece, but we've all bought things that were in excess of what our budget was if we perceived enough meaningful value. Maybe for that audience, you need to retool your communication strategy with them so that they perceive the same level of value that the IP attorneys would perceive.
So carry on.
No, please. I was going to give you an example of this.
No, do give me an example. Yeah.
Okay. So I'm 53 years old. In back when I was a junior in high school, I needed a summer job. And I lived in a town called Marlborough, New Jersey, which is in between Manhattan, New York City, and Philadelphia. And we had a family friend that was coming up with a revolutionary business idea. Now, this is the 1980s when I share this revolutionary business idea. It was pickup and delivery dry cleaning. And his name was Dave. And Dave didn't own a dry cleaning store. He said, I think it's a hardship for people to take their dirty clothes to the dry cleaner and return home, return those back once they were clean. He said, I think we need a service that takes care of the clothes going to and fro. So he developed this business, and my summer job in 1986 was his driver and part-time salesperson. And I wondered, would people be willing to pay more to have this service? Because he didn't own a dry cleaning store. So this was a cost on top of getting your clothes clean. So Shireen, I ask you, do you think people are willing to pay more for that service?
For what service?
Like transportation. To have someone pick up their dirty clothes and bring them back when they were clean.
I wouldn't have thought so, no.
The answer was some people.
Some people.
Some people. Those who worked at home.
Yeah, their circumstances.
Or didn't dress for work, you know, in a business suit. Or had someone that could help take their dry cleaning to and fro. They thought we were nuts for this idea. But remember where I said this was, Marlborough, New Jersey, about an hour and a half to Manhattan or to Philadelphia. Those people that were commuting, and a lot of people from Marlborough commuted to either New York City or to Philadelphia on a daily basis, thought the idea was brilliant. They wished they had come up with it. Now, if I had spent my summer going after people that worked from home, didn't dress for work, or had someone that could help them take their dry cleaning to and fro, I would have sold nothing. I would have tanked the business. But when I gained clarity on who would perceive meaningful value, those who had the lengthy commute, didn't have someone that could help them take their dry cleaning to and fro, when I focused on that audience, the business went gangbusters. We actually hired several other drivers. And so this whole idea of understanding who will perceive meaningful value, that's where that target client profile comes into play, of having the clarity of who will perceive meaningful value, because salespeople spend way too much time going after opportunities where they will never perceive enough meaningful value to support the price that you're selling. And then the salespeople get frustrated because they're not getting any buyers. They just keep getting pushback on price. So a Walmart buyer is not a target buyer. That's a common expression here. And you have to understand where you fit, where that meaningful value is, and understanding who the right audience is to pursue.
Right. That's really interesting, because a lot of marketers should already be doing that. So if they have positioned the business correctly, and for example, identified that people who are live far away from Manhattan or whatever, who are not at work, need this service, then surely you as the salespeople would know that and it wouldn't need to find a differentiator. Doesn't that usually work like that with in businesses?
It is extremely rare that I've found an organization where the salespeople have been given the level of clarity that they need to understand this is who will perceive meaningful value in what we're selling. It's extremely rare.
Really? That's really surprising. It shows a sort of lack of, coordination between teams. Do you deal with big businesses usually, or what sort of size businesses would that be?
All across the board, from the little guy all the way up to the Fortune 1000.
Well, I guess you, as the people speaking to buyers, would know more about what buyers want and need and could feed that back to
the market. No, it's the other way around. They know it. I have to facilitate discussion in a creative way to help them recognize who that is. Mm-hmm. And then to prepare that tool that we've talked about, that target client profile, you'll see it's a wizard format where it asks you a question, and but there's 9 components, and you'll see once you get through it, mm-hmm. that as you read through that entire document, you go, okay, now I know why I didn't get this deal, mm-hmm. because they weren't aligned with where we fit.
Right.
And so, now I know mm-hmm. what type of business that I should be pursuing all day long.
So it's a quick way of getting started to work out who your target buyer is. Would you need to go and speak to people? Say you're starting something new. Would you need to start by finding people to talk to?
I would. I mean, I would be going out looking for market intelligence and saying, theoretically, this is who I think my target client is. So I would be talking with folks in that sector and positioning what my offering is and seeing what response that I get, being very careful to see, is it my communication strategy, how I position what this is, or are they really someone that doesn't care about this?
Right. Okay. And assuming you've talked to a few people, that you're happy to talk to people, does your download give people questions to ask regardless of their industry or what? How can Absolutely. You give me some examples of the questions?
Right. So for example, I'll use the dry cleaning example.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So you take Dave's idea, right, of a transportation service on top of the dry cleaning, that he could have started off by having conversations with various people. Ones that are in business, ones that wear uniforms, and everything in between, to gather data. And then look at all that data and say, what does this tell me? Okay, this group here, I shouldn't waste my time. They already have so for example, let's say my theory was anyone that wears a uniform or a business suit is a candidate for this service. And then I start talking to people that wear uniforms and I find out that their employer takes care of the cleaning of that. Then I say, okay, so if I'm going to go after this market segment, going after the individual is a waste of time because they're not going to pay for this service because their employer takes care of it. So I need to adjust my strategy if I'm going to go after that and go start talking with the employer. Then I start talking with the employer. I come to find out that they're in a commercial dry cleaning segment, and the commercial dry cleaning segment provides that service already. They already take care of the pickup and delivery. Okay, so that's a dead end. I'm not going to waste my time with that, but I've explored it and determined it's not a market segment for me. But there's still a huge opportunity for me in people that are dressing in business attire for work, that their employer isn't going to pay to have their dress clothes cleaned. And now I have some deeper exploration there and have conversations with them. And then I identify, okay, so if they're dressing for work, but they have someone that can help with their dry cleaning, you're getting it to the dry cleaners and pick it up, yeah, they don't see value in this. Okay, so I want to filter that out. I don't want to go after that either. But people that had a lengthy commute, okay, so that was interesting to them, and they didn't have someone at home that could help out. So now I gain such specific clarity on the audience I want to pursue. And we had no issue with anyone that had a lengthy commute, that was dressing for work, and didn't have someone at home that could help with the dry cleaning. All day long, they signed up for the service, didn't have any issue with the price.
Okay, so you discover that. How do you then, in practice, identify those who have someone at home or those who haven't? How, you know, how do you efficiently kind of disqualify people?
Great question. So in the initial step of selling, we call it discovery. Mm-hmm. And a component of discovery is qualifying. And those expressions, discovery and qualifying, are not new. I didn't make them up, been around forever. But the level of depth, when we talk about qualifying, what we should be qualifying against is our target client profile. Is there a fit? Too often salespeople waste way too much time pursuing deals that they are never going to win at the prices that they want because it doesn't align with that target client profile. So qualifying means we're going to lose early. And that's a win. If we can lose early, meaning we identify very early on, they're not going to be someone that pays for this type of service at the price that we're offering it. Let's go find someone else. Mm-hmm. The world's huge. We can find someone else that we can be investing our time wisely.
Great. Well, thank you very much. That's been really useful. Can you mention the URL again?
Sure. It's targetclientsprofile.com.
Okay, great. And where can people find you if they want to get in touch?
Sure. My website is salesarchitects.com, ArchitectS.com. You can also learn about the two books that I've written on this subject, Sales Differentiation and Sell Different. They're both available on Amazon in hardcover, Kindle, and audiobook.
Oh, great. What's the difference between the two books?
Very good. Sales differentiation is primarily focused on differentiating what you sell. Sell different is exclusively focused on looking at every touch point, every interaction you have with a buyer, and doing something different to outsmart, outmaneuver, and outsell the competition.
Oh, great. I must get hold of that and have a look at it.
Thank you.
Great. Thank you very much indeed. Bye.
Bye. Thank you, Shireen.
If you're interested in creating better brands, be sure to subscribe to the BrandTuned newsletter and get weekly updates, including notifications when new episodes drop.